Welcome back to KSCJ Radio, 1360 AM, 94.9 FM in Sioux City, Iowa. I'm Brian Vikalskis, and this is Having Read That, conversations with authors about their books.
My guest is David O. Dowling, who is out with his new book, A Delicate Aggression, Savagery and Survival in the Iowa Writer's Workshop. David is a professor at the University of Iowa School of Journalism and Mass Communication. David, for a bibliophile like me, this book was just, it was like devouring six big Thanksgiving meals at one time, and I absolutely loved it. But for those of us who are familiar with the Writer's Workshop, the name Paul Engel has sort of stood as sort of the George Washington of the outfit. Do you remember the first time you heard Paul Engel's name?
Well, you know, I do. I was on campus working as a faculty member there, and I came across a terrific article by one of my faculty colleagues named Lauren Glass, and the article is called Middleman, and it showed up in the Minnesota Review, and it was about Engel's work as an intermediary, as a sort of impresario of the Iowa Writers' Workshop, who was constantly finagling deals in order to fund his fledgling program, which otherwise received no funding whatsoever from the university. He really had to find his own space for the program, too, by way of using some sort of leftover, we call them barracks. They call them Quonset huts here on campus. They were those sort of corrugated tin steel roofed temporary housing. And those were located on the eastern banks of the Iowa River, where the IMU is currently at Iowa. And so on this shoestring budget, he was forced to go and find any source of revenue he could. He would go to a man of refrigeration. He would go to the Rockefeller Institute. He even was not below soliciting funds from an ice cream manufacturer in Chicago to fund a conference on Baudelaire on campus. So he was sort of this indefatigable businessman on the one hand, but quite capable of moving in literary circles and attracting some of the best minds of our generation. So this is where I had first heard of him through Lauren's piece, and it sort of fascinated me. And I thought, well, Lauren, you need to write his biography. And he was very candid in saying, I've got other things going on. It's too big a project. Maybe you, Dave, should write his biography. And that's sort of where this all happened. I then realized that no comprehensive history had been done on the workshop. And so I pivoted from the idea of doing his biography to doing a whole history.
I'd never heard of the name Wilbur Schramm before I read this book. Who was he?
Well, Wilbur Schramm, interestingly, was the one who had originally created the workshop. Any sort of Iowa writer's workshop that we think of today really started with Schramm and not Engel. Engel was the one who turned it into this powerhouse program that could attract all of these great minds. But Schramm was very important in the sense that he first actually held classes that were workshops, but they were, as I say, totally different in nature. They had none of the competitive sort of fiery streaks that Engel inculcated into the system. People would come over to Schramm's house. They would sort of spread out in his living room. He had a big bearskin rug and a crackling fire and his wife serving fresh-made cookies, and they would all sort of talk about how great their poetry and fiction was. And no one turned a critical eye toward one another. There was no, savagery or survival involved in these workshops. And it wasn't until World War II, and basically as the war had, then we have Schramm going to war, we have Engel not staying back and being his interim for the program in the meantime. Well, as Schramm leaves, then the power vacuum is filled by Engel, who then transforms it and reinvents the entire program into something that's more professionally directed, not sort of this domestic idol of, let's sit around and talk about our wonderful poetry and kind of have this almost very dilettantish, amateurish reading of one's amateur kind of writing. But instead, let's gear this toward the professional market in a very direct and pointed way so that we can generate fame, so that we can generate professional authorship out of this, as opposed to just having kind of a leisure activity, or something more geared toward course credit in and of itself, and nothing beyond.
The title of your book, Delicate Aggression, seems to stand in contrast with the word in the subtitle, savagery. So how are those two ideas reconciled in this workshop model?
Well, you know, it's interesting. The line comes from Engel originally, and he was of the perspective that really writing needed to be hard. It shouldn't be too easy, as in the Wilbur Schramm method, and it should be something akin to the horse training and horse breeding that his father did when he grew up. That is to say, young writers needed to be broken of their bad habits and severely trained out of them. They needed to, in these workshop sessions, lose blood, but as he said, not too much blood, so that they could withstand the pressures of the literary marketplace, so that they could handle the abuse that they were inevitably going to take from editors and publishers, reviewers out there in the real publishing industry. So his desire was to turn the workshop into this training ground for professional authors, and to move it out of that, you know, sort of sense of complacency. He specifically, you know, had come to this position of becoming an academic and embracing the academic world from the religious world. He had been a Methodist minister in training and decided to renounce that vocation altogether because he believed that epiphanies and you know, sort of calls from heaven to your vocation were absolutely wrong, that made no sense to him whatsoever. And he then took the opposite view and said that what you make of your vocation is deliberate, it's constructed, it's aggressive. And if it means telling someone that their writing is bad, in the case of the workshop here, so be it. I think one of his lines was, you know, a writer should be put in a situation where others around him are alert to their faults and aware of their weaknesses. And so instead of growing the good, the whole notion is beating back the bad. Hence, yes, savagery, indeed. And there was plenty of it in the workshop. We have a lot of writers who have looked back in anger about their experience at the workshop. Some of them have sworn by the method. T.C. Boyle loved it. Turned his own daughter onto the program because he thought it worked so well, and she's actually a graduate of it herself. Flannery O'Connor, when asked if universities stifle writers, she says they don't stifle enough of them. So, you know, there were people who were advocates, but then there were others like Sandra Cisneros who clearly said repeatedly, and I mean, she's been interviewed now for decades after her experience in the 1970s with the workshop, and she has had nothing to say good about her experience whatsoever. So there's a lot of spite in some experiences, but then again, like I say, on the other side, plenty of support, plenty of people who will swear by it.
I'm chatting with David O. Dowling about his book, A Delicate Aggression, Savagery and Survival in the Iowa Writers' Workshop. It's available now wherever fine books are sold. And if you have any interest in writing, this is such a great description of basically how writing has evolved out of this little college town in Iowa here over the course of the 20th and into the 21st century. David, this book also deals with tragedy in the workshop. Robert Shelley's suicide comes to mind. Can you tell me about that episode?
Well, yes. Bob Shelley came to the workshop as this sort of wunderkind, as this superstar from WashU in St. Louis. He was really brilliant beyond his years, and already professionalized. I wrote a book on Emerson some years ago and about Emerson's proteges. Emerson was fond of saying he loved a quote-unquote finished man who he could work with, i.e., you know, someone who would come to him as a follower, but who already had the acumen in place, who already had the skill set to be a professional, who didn't need to be trained from the ground up. Well, Bob Shelley was exactly that finished man when he came to the workshop. So his situation was terribly unfortunate in that, as a poet, he wrote verse that absolutely was phenomenally dark and moving, and in fact drew on his inner demons directly. People in the workshop could see that what these living nightmares were, what these sort of almost Dante-esque pieces were doing, were drawing on something very much unstable within him. They weren't about to, though, step in and try to intervene, because they knew that this would cut off his access to his greatest creative source, you know, right, of energy, of productivity and creativity. So truly, you know, what happened was he was ironically kind of put in the position of trying to grow a talent creatively, but at the expense of his own mental health. And so he declined precipitously in terms of his own mental health as his poetry progressed. His poetry was so phenomenal, in fact, that W.D. Snodgrass was inspired by it later to found and put together something called the Confessional School of Poetry, which then Robert Lowell picked up on later. And truly, it wasn't Snodgrass's idea, it wasn't Lowell's idea, it was Bob Shelley's idea. Bob Shelley's lost history because, unfortunately, his death came much, much too early. But the sad situation was that he was suffering every bit as much as he was succeeding. So you could almost chart the evolution of his poetry, you know, as it was growing. He was sort of inversely growing to his decline psychologically. He also had gender issues. According to one of his mentors and faculty members, he apparently was a closeted homosexual, and, you know, that, of course, at this time, mid-20th century, was extraordinarily difficult. That compounded the issues, I think, already coming into play, which were, you know, psychological. But the workshop environment, you know, unfortunately did not help, didn't work out to be a kind of situation where he could have people say, okay, you know, poetry's not going to be the priority here, your mental health is. And because he never had anybody step up in that capacity for him, you know, this tragedy occurred.
You cover all kinds of different famous people that a lot of people have heard of coming through there. Dylan Thomas made a great visit. There's a great story in there about him in the early 50s coming there. You know, T.C. Boyle, Kurt Vonnegut taught there for a while, probably wrote at least most of, if not all, of Slaughterhouse-Five while he's in Iowa City. But, you know, in the 70s, Paul Engel's gone, the Age of Aquarius starts, and this is before Frank Conroy took over. So what distinguished that Age of Aquarius time from the others, where you have them described as the name of the director, versus the 60s, the 70s were just Age of Aquarius?
Well, the Age of Aquarius is you know, just sort of exactly what we think of as the, you know, quintessential 60s and 70s in terms of, you know, a time of more greater intensity in terms of political consciousness, experimentation with all sorts of alternative forms of living, drug experimentation, et cetera. Not all writers were meshing with this ethos, though. For example, Jane Smiley did not necessarily identify with campus culture at Iowa, which was still reverberating from the late 60s. You know, the plate glass windows of the university bookstore had been broken so many times in anti-war riots that they'd been replaced by cubbyholes. She felt disconnected, for example, from the activist fervor on campus in the early 1970s. You know, there were students who were living together in loose commune-like groups, and in these groups, drugs circulated freely. Everyone seemed to have sort of a roommate who devoted himself to smoking and/or growing marijuana. With sexual promiscuity, which was sort of viewed as a token of solidarity. And, you know, a lot of these groups were in existence. But again, you know, Smiley found her own literary circle there and consisted of her best friend Barbara Grossman and her mentor and faculty member Jane Howard, who she really stuck to, and they weren't really part of that activist fervor in the workshop, but it was definitely there on campus and throughout the community, and certainly some of the members of the workshop were part of that. Some of the women, for example, in the workshop were very much activists in terms of the what was then called, you know, we called the feminist movement now, but then it was called the women's liberation movement, right? And certainly there were a few of the workshop members who were active in that. But, you know, and we have, you know, some sort of clashes, too, now and again, between the Vietnam War veterans who were at the workshop and what, you know, we would call now or identify now as hippies from the 1960s era, which would include, of course, T.C. Boyle, who absolutely identified in that mold.
You have several photographs in this book. The only photo that does not include either a faculty member or a student at the workshop is one of those peace marches on Clinton Street in the 60s. Why did you choose to include that photograph?
Well, that really captured exactly that kind of color, that local color that I was trying to capture with things like Jane Smiley's description of the place. And, you know, this is something that it's easy historically to look back on and think, well, everybody was part of this. But they weren't, you know. Not everyone identified politically that way. You know, like there's you and I have been talking about before, the veterans on campus, for example, who didn't necessarily identify with that protest movement. But this is what was happening on campus. And this is the sort of the context that colored the institution. The institution, of course, doesn't happen apart from the community. There's a town and gown kind of relationship going on here that's interconnected. It's reciprocal. And certainly there are those tensions, and as I mentioned, I mean, T.C. Boyle coming into town and, you know, carrying with him, as he says, a gargantuan heroin addiction from his hippie days in upstate New York, that he was trying to, you know, blunt the edge of through Quaaludes. He quickly got addicted to Quaaludes and then found another addiction in writing. And interestingly, in this workshop, which is a highly competitive, as we were saying, you know, contentious environment designed to simulate the publishing situation, he rose to the occasion, and with classes dominated by GIs, you know, former Vietnam War combat veterans, he took that on as a challenge, you know, to try to defeat them, most of them writing about their own war experiences, usually fictionalizing them, and he came in with a pointed purpose, agenda, of triumphing over them. And I mean, he even likened it at some points to, you know, smashing a tennis ball in his opponent's face in terms of his sense of triumph in those workshops. And truly was signified his sense of difference from them and alienation from them and desire to stand up to them was signified precisely by that divide between veteran on the one hand and, you know, countercultural hippie represented by himself on the other. And so those two forces were definitely diametrically opposed in some cases. And, you know, I wanted to signify that through that one photo.
All right. Well, this book, I mean, we could talk for hours on it. The book is A Delicate Aggression, Savagery and Survival in the Iowa Writers' Workshop by David O. Dowling. The book's available wherever your fine books are sold. We've just barely scratched the surface. This thing's so full of great stories about John Irving, about like the T.C. Boyle, the Jane Smiley stuff into the 90s and 2000s with Anthony Swofford and that crew. You got to go check this book out if you have any interest in writing whatsoever. David, just a fantastic piece of work here that we are all learning from, and thank you so much for joining us to talk about it.
Well, thank you for having me. Appreciate it.
This has been Having Read That on KSCJ Radio in Sioux City, Iowa. I'm Brian Vakulskas. Check out all of our episodes on our website, kscj.com. Also, be sure to like Having Read That on Facebook and subscribe to our iTunes podcast. Thanks to segment producer John Weisler. We will be back next time. Baby, write this down. Take a little more.